Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's Monday, it's the wind-up, the latest video games, the biggest talking points, the juiciest leaks and rumors for the gaming week. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Good morning, Scott Tilford.
Good morning and good afternoon, good evening and good night. We thought we would talk about the latest video games and different stuff. And I hear little Dickie Bird told me that you've traded Far Cry 6 in.
Oh, dude, I've got a big story about this, but I had a bit of an existential crisis over the weekend, not to start the pod off on a too much of a dark note, but yeah, I was thinking about it all week because, you know, we covered Far Cry 6. I keep calling it Far Cry 5. That's what I wish it was. Yeah, we talked about it on Monday. We went into a bit more depth on Wednesday. I played it for a bunch more hours since then. I think I put about 12 hours in. All told, and I was just not enjoying it because it was frustrating. It was, you know, really lovingly put together, but I kind of got into this routine with it where I was, you know, blowing up the AA guns and I was going from one story beat to another, and all of the missions were very samey, at least the ones I was doing then. And I got to this point where I realized, and I'm going to jump into something a bit more bit deeper, I suppose. Okay. So I want to open this up to you and whoever's listening. But over the pandemic especially, I feel like I have personally used video games, and I've talked about this a lot, as a means to kind of occupy my mind in a way that other media and other actions haven't been able to do. When I'm playing a video game, I'm thinking about the video game. You know, I don't even have time to think about problems, myself, all of that jazz. And it became a real coping mechanism for me to help improve my mental health during, you know, a really difficult time. And I've found almost that over the past two years even, I've kind of used games increasingly in that way. And I kind of got to a moment with it over the weekend where I was just thinking, am I playing this because I enjoy it? Or am I playing it because it is a bit of escapism and it's stopping me from, you know, having to deal with any of the things that are making me down and bummed in my real life? And I kind of just had this moment where I wanted rid of it, not necessarily because of the game itself, it's because of the baggage I was bringing to it, but I just wanted to be free of it. And I'm starting from now to try and improve my gaming habits and only play stuff that I actually want to play and that I'm interested in, because this goes into a deeper thing in a second that I want to touch on, but I'll let you speak in a second, sorry. But yeah, I just kind of got to this position where I was like, I don't always have to have a game that I'm playing. I don't have to occupy my time in that way. I can do other things. I can watch movies. I can read books. I can do things that are actually interesting me in the moment and not just use games as a means to occupy my time, because I love games so much that I don't want to reduce them to just that. Like, I love games for the artistry. I love games for the mechanics. I love games for the story, the characters, all of that stuff. And I realized I was just viewing them as this kind of very simplistic thing.
Well,
as a crutch, like I was saying, you know?
You know, the thing is, though, like, of all the games that would remind you of that mindset of, like, oh my god, I'm just going through stuff, I'm just going through the motions, Far Cry 6 is the most one of those games, and maybe ever. Like, it is the most, like, I like what it brings to the table, but what it brings to the table is a very specific itinerary of things that you've already had. Like, it is literally just a checkbox list of stuff to do for the sake of doing stuff. That's all it is. I viewed it as, like, the fast food game. It's my podcast game. And for me, that, like, it kind of just defaults to being its strength, because I just don't want to think. I don't want to watch a story or get immersed in something. Don't want to have anything with any real purpose. I'll play Far Cry 6.
Yeah, and I want to kind of stress that I don't think it necessarily has to be that game. No. And if people are getting a lot out of it, that's cool. In my specific situation, I wanted it gone because it was stopping me from playing games that I actually wanted to play. Like, I really wanted to go back to Alan Wake Remastered.
But you
I
said Ori and the Blind Forest a bit weird, though.
I don't know what that is. I've never heard of that game or that series. But I sort of had this obligation in my head when I was playing it. I was thinking, well, it's like a big release. We've been so starved for big releases this year. I've got to finish it. I've got to see what Giancarlo Esposito is going to do. I've got to see all of this game. And then I kind of had a moment of realization of, I don't, you know, I've put 12 hours into it. I paid full price for it. You know, I've seen a lot of it. I've done the work, like it shouldn't become work, you know. Playing games should be fun, even though it's our job, obviously, you know. We should be obligated to just suffer through things but play a full thing to completion, just so we can kind of talk about it, when we can talk about it, when in and of itself maybe getting bored 10 hours in and trading it in is in itself a talking point.
Well, the thing is, like, point, you know? This is like a wider conversation in regards to, like, how much should you keep up with as a games journalist? And, like, I, for the longest time, were trying, and I try and keep up with everything. I buy literally every last goddamn thing. Like, I didn't even realize Guardians of the Galaxy was out tomorrow. I just said to you before we started recording that as soon as I saw that, I was like, I can get on that at midnight. I can do a few hours. No, stop it. Just wean the toxin out of my system. But I do like to try and keep up with as much stuff as possible. I think that mentality or that reality clashes with, obviously, the reality of what we've gone through for the last 20 odd months. But also, like I said, I'm going to bring it back to the reality of what Far Cry 6 is. It is the most checkbox similar style game ever. You know, you just know to the core that there's no reason to stick around unless you're enjoying those specific gameplay loops over and over again. And like you said, you've already put enough time in anyway where we can do this conversation. You could absolutely have a massive conversation on Far Cry 6, but I think you could almost have the same conversation after about half an hour with that game. Then, you know, you wouldn't even need unless there is like some specific Giancarlo Esposito reveal scene later or something, like a very specific plot scene. But yeah, I think it depends, because I think that Ubisoft have very much like pigeonholed themselves into this checkbox. They're almost like their own little weird genre. It's like, you know what you're getting from them. It's like, you know that from Nintendo you're getting a rule of three thing for a boss fight, and you sort of know that that's what you're getting from Ubisoft, is this just list of stuff to do. And almost in a Death Stranding sense, like, that's quite satisfying in terms of, like, you know what you're doing, and you know how you can get through it, and it's manageable and quantifiable, but it's also boring as hell if it doesn't work for you.
That's it. It's only if it doesn't click. Like, all the power to anyone who it has clicked with and is really enjoying it. Like, I think that's really amazing. Like, I wish it was me. I wish it clicked, but it's kind of like, in the way that Death Stranding clicked and I was in that, I was just kind of trying to be in it in the same way, trying to be in Far Cry 6 in the same way. Yeah, but it didn't get me in on that kind of level that I needed to. So I was just kind of deconstructing it in my head as I went. And it's kind of like, it's a certain point, whether you're a games journalist, whether you're a games YouTuber, whether you're just a games fan, like, you're not obligated to go through anything. You can just drop it and then do something you want to
live your life. I think that there's that's a whole, again, it's a whole wider conversation, but I think a lot of like self-reflection came out of the last sort of 20 odd months in regards to literal life purpose. Like, if I'm sitting down and playing something for hours on end, and X thing could happen to me tomorrow, then have I spent my time in the right way? And I never used to think entirely about that before, but I think that, like, yeah, the last sort of, it is almost going to be 2 years. Like, next March it'll be 2 years, or we're coming up on 2 years since the COVID was first discovered and stuff, so it is coming up on that time. But yeah, I think it does make you have a whole bunch of self-reflective conversations, or opinions on, yeah, exactly the right way to spend your time. And all of this is to say that maybe Far Cry 6 isn't the most rewarding way to spend your life on this earth. It's a fun fast food time, but that's about it. I think in regards to the wider how much stuff should you keep up with stuff, that almost falls on the games themselves to be worth playing when there's so many other things going on. And Far Cry 6, like I said, it serves a very specific thing, but that's it. But all of this is to say that you've traded in Far Cry 6, you feel better for it, you can feel better, the weight is lifted.
It really does feel like a weight has lifted, because now I've got Alan Wake to play. I'm going to get the Outer Wilds DLC. I'm going to wait on the reviews of Guardians, because I am interested in that. If it gets good reviews, I'll
The love of the sweet lord, pick up Metroid Dread, pal.
The weekend. I will pick up Metroid Dread eventually, but that's the thing, man. Like, there's so much capital C content in today's age that it's like the biggest, you know, 1% problem, I suppose. You get overwhelmed by how much you've got to keep up on. But when you're online all the time, when we're talking to video game fans all the time, it just feels like there's so much to get to. And it's like, no, from now on, I'm going to obviously try to hit the biggies so we can make have enjoyed hashtag content like this. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, it's cool if you just want to play a bit of Alan Wake and then also watch The Woman in Black on a night. Like, that's awesome. Like, split your time like that.
Yeah.
So it feels good to not have this obligation to finish Far Cry 6 anymore. It feels very nice indeed.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I think all of this is, for me, it's more of a reflection on just what Far Cry 6 brings to the table, which is not very much, as opposed to, like, it can be a wider comment on how much you want to keep up with stuff in general. But I think if Far Cry 6 had more to it, then you would have more, it would be a more complex conversation as to the realities of how much you want to keep up with and how much you want to talk about.
Totally.
But you, like I said, you know all of Far Cry 6 within like an hour, if that.
It's telling that Far Cry 6 was the game that kind of like sparked all of this. Mm. Like you said, I think Ben Roy said a really interesting thing, maybe in a previous podcast, maybe when we were just talking out at the pub one day, but he said essentially like, you get one big Ubisoft game a year, and if you try to have more than that, you sort of see the seams being stitched together. And for me, my one big Ubisoft game this year was Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I put 70 hours in. So when I'm 12 hours into Far Cry 6, I just think, I can't do this again. This is such a similar experience.
That was the thing. I did all of the last Ubisoft game that I off the top of my head that I think I finished, at least in Assassin's Creed's case, was Assassin's Creed Origins, because I really wanted to see what was happening with the story. And obviously they ended up separating, and it was in the DLC, and then they were like, actually the actual story of the Hidden Blade is in Odyssey. And so, but I finished Origins and I put like 60-70 hours into that, and then Odyssey was the quickest game that came around after that. It was like only like 5 or 6 months after Origins they did all of that again, and obviously it was more action focused and stuff, and that was the first time I was like, I can't do another one of these straight away. I've just done this, like, this is this is crazy.
Well, this is kind of, you know, in a wider conversation that we're going to touch on soon about open worlds and stuff. But, you know, when I was considering trading it in, I want to kind of like stress that, you know, trading in games is not exactly, you know, a new or original.
It's not a term I've heard for 40 years.
It's just that me personally, you know, I've talked about this on podcasts, I've talked about this with you before. Mm-hmm. It's so rare for me to not finish a game. Like when I start something, I almost feel compelled in my brain to get to the end of it so I can, you know, bank it and finish it, say I completed it. And I was kind of like thinking back to the games that I haven't finished, which are very few. And the vast majority of them were Ubisoft games. It was stuff like Watch Dogs 2. It was stuff like Assassin's Creed Unity, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Now this Far Cry 6. You know, it was all Ghost Recon Wildlands. It was all Ubisoft games. And I was like, that's
because they're all the same game
in and of itself. Because, they pack so much stuff in. And we kind of briefly touched upon it when we talked about the Assassin's Creed Valhalla experience earlier this year, but there's so much of it. It's almost like Ubisoft doesn't even expect you to finish those games. It just gives you a buffet and it's like, go nuts for a little bit. If you get to the end, cool.
Yeah, I do think underneath all of this, there's a worthwhile conversation to be had in brevity and focus and like game design, not just being a bunch of stuff. Because I feel like the opulent side of how much money Ubisoft make goes into them just the coding department just being told, just make everything, just make a humongous amount of stuff, and that's how we'll give people bang for their buck, just sheer literally quantity over quality. And it's been a thing for years, but I think the Far Cry 6 was very much the tipping point, and obviously the coverage around Far Cry 6 centered on that a lot. I like it, but it is just that turn your brain off dumb podcast. It's literally, and this is the biggest insult to it as well as the reason I like it, it's just something to do with my hands while I listen to a podcast. Not to make it filthy, but it literally is. It's just something I can play while I'm listening to a podcast. That's all it is. And that is the most damning thing I can say, but that's also that seems to be the only thing that they want it to be anyway. Speaking of specific purposes, though, and things to fandoms to fulfill, last week was the reveal of the GTA trilogy, the Definitive Edition. It's a big old thing. And so they showed off a minute of gameplay on Friday afternoon. But we kind of thought we'd talk about the reality of how GTA has aged over the years. Because for me, I love old school GTA. I love when it was cartoony. I love when there was stunt ramps everywhere. There was slow motion triggers that you could jump into. I love when it was more over the top. And it was almost like Rockstar did this by accident, but the mission design was just, this dude needs killing, this car needs stealing, this thing needs blowing up, and you just do it however you want. And the way that makes you think, where it's like, okay, I'm going to go buy a sniper rifle and I'm going to shoot the dude from across the map. I'm going to fly a plane into the side of this van and that's how I'm going to destroy this convoy. And the game will recognize all that stuff. And, you know, putting a bomb in one of the cars and then the character gets into it and they blow themselves up because that's the mission trigger, but they're not coded to recognize there's a bomb in the car. Things like that that I feel like Rockstar got the F away from over the years, and especially for something like Red Dead Redemption 2, it just became go here, do exactly this, and if you deviate from that path, you've failed because you've gone outside the zone or whatever else. And so bring it all the way back to that I opened this on. I love this period in GTA, and I spent my weekend playing GTA 3 in San Andreas, specifically because it just reminds me of how much I love this old school design. I don't know how much you agree with that, though.
I personally like latter-day Rockstar. I like the grandiosity of the cinematic storytelling.
All those shipping containers, mate.
And I don't necessarily like the shipping containers, but I like a lot of what they do with their mission structure and stuff. Mm. But that still doesn't mean I don't have a fondness for the originals. The thing is, and I think the biggest difference is, I played the GTA trilogy, as it were, GTA 3, San Andreas, and Vice City, when I was so young and well before I should have. I must have been like 10 years old playing those games, if not younger. So I don't actually know necessarily those games as they were intended, if that makes sense. The majority of my memories, even though I've been through them all properly, the majority of my memories center around using them as a sort of toy box, as a sandbox to just kind of go nuts in, turn all the cheats on, and just have a lot of fun. Like, they were just a vector for kind of like that creativity, which is very cool. But it meant that, you know, when I think back of the biggest things that impacted me as a kid growing up, you know, I think of Metal Gear 1 and 2. I think of other games that are escaping me now that I know were really good. You know, I think of like the stories and stuff. Where
Smackdown 2, Know Your Role.
Here Comes the Pain, Smackdown, No Way Out, all that stuff. The GTA trilogy is obviously there because I played so much of it. But I definitely prefer, and when I'm ranking my top games of all time, the games that Rockstar went on to make, you know, your Max Payne 3s, your Red Dead Redemption 2s, your GTA 5s, your GTA 4s to an extent. Like, from probably Red Dead Redemption 1 onwards, that's like my favorite era of Rockstar.
That's fascinating, because like, you know what you played when you were 10 years old? I was playing the original top-down GTA. I still remember having this sit down in my living room with my parents as the 1975's John Woff sat next to me, convincing my parents that it was worth playing. I'm dropping him in. One of my old best mates.
That is John awesome. Woff.
Playing the old saxophone, but we both sat down and discovered GTA at the same time, so I came on board with GTA from the top down 2D days, and by the time GTA 3 came around, I was on that revolution. Oh my god, this is the best thing ever! This feels like another world to check into, and GTA 3, Vice City, San Andreas are easily some of the most fondest memories I've got in my life. Like, I absolutely love those old games, for everything that they represent, from the music to the characters to like just the tone of those worlds. But it is in the mission design, it is in the way that you play them, and the thing that I always love, because there's an interview with Dan Houser where he talked to The Guardian about like how much their identity changed over the years, and he just said that they went down that sort of cartoony route because that was all they could render, because like, once you've done a world to a certain size, you can't do it realistically, and part of them always wanted, or part of him, he always wanted to do more cinematically focused stuff, more Hollywood chasing stuff, which they were able to do from GTA 4 onwards. But then you also have that like split thing for Rockstar as a company, where for GTA 5 it was way more kind of crazy and slapstick again, and it was more over the top, and obviously Red Dead Redemption 2 is a massive comment on playing the games as anarchic as possible versus playing them properly. And so, but for me, like, I adore that old school period, that period where it felt like a garage band, where it felt like the initial, they're like a punk band or a metal band or something, and it's just, it's all garage energy, where it's just sort of, what can we do? And obviously it was DMA design initially, and then the Houser brothers helped greenlight DMA's original Grand Theft Auto. It was like Race and Chase, it became GTA and whatever, but you know, the houses became more involved in it. But that period where it was the initial Grand Theft Auto 3D trilogy, and then just putting their money into Bully, into Manhunt, into the Warriors, that period between like 2000 and 2006, I think it is my favorite period in Rockstar history. And that's what I think of when I think of Rockstar. I don't think of the bolted on the rails style cinematic stuff. I like that they went there, but for me, there's nothing anywhere near as enjoyable as those old school games, when there was such a scrappy, ramshackle approach to those games that I just absolutely love.
Well, this is the beauty of it, man. Like, I feel like when we're talking about Rockstar, I don't think there's necessarily a wrong answer. I mean, you might argue otherwise when I get into why I like GTA 5 style more. But, you know, I fully agree with everything you've just said. I love the diversity in the portfolio, which we haven't been shy about saying on news videos in the past. You know, like you said, Rockstar greenlighting so many games and working on so many games. Yeah, outside of the GTA trilogy, which they pumped out really fast and managed to maintain and element of quality. Yeah, I fully agree also that there was a time where they were almost the underdogs, even though they were incredibly successful. They could position that more authentically than they can now when they are at the very top of the video game industry, making absolutely insane. Not even the video game industry, any entertainment industry across the globe.
I think they make more money in an individual day. I think it was $18 million they make every day or something. It might be billion. Right. It can't be billion. It was a lot of money that they make every single day anyway.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, you just have to look at the continuing success of GTA 5 and its sales to like just know that. Yeah, they're definitely not the underdogs anymore. That said, though, for me, the games that have resonated the most have been when they kind of took all of that money and then made the more considered games, the bigger games, the more lavish games, because, you know, I'm a sucker for detail. I'm a sucker for, you know, scope when it's done well and it's not just a Far Cry gimmick of throwing a bunch of checklists at you. So when we got to Red Dead Redemption 1, and I liked GTA 4, that was the first GTA that I got day one and loved. I remember everyone at my school talking about it, and I wasn't really bothered at first because, like I said, I played the others, but they hadn't left a huge impact on me. Then GTA 4 came out and I played that to death, loved it, even though it was kind of like wonky in what it set out
to do. That game's driving.
Yes, 100%. But then they kind of like took what they learned from that to make Red Dead Redemption 1. And for me, that was the game changer. That was the game where I just thought, everything you're doing now is resonating with me from a gameplay perspective, from a setting perspective, from a mechanical perspective, from a story perspective, character perspective, atmosphere perspective, music perspective. All the different perspectives were nailed. And even though I do lament that they haven't made many games since then, I do think each one has been a banger in its own right. And even GTA 5, for me, is a great meld of the personality that came before and the modern Rockstar game design. And I know that might be an unpopular opinion to an extent, but I really, really did like GTA 5 when that came.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
My thing with 5 is that it felt like older people trying to recapture their youth. Like, it felt like when a punk band goes back on tour and tries to play the classics and they can't, the attitude's not there anymore, they're just going through the motions. There was a time that I saw Aerosmith live when they first returned for the first time, and you could tell they were there for the money. And it just, that was my whole thing with GTA 5, was that the torture sequence that was in there, the way that a lot of it was written, it just felt like it was trying to be shock for shock's sake, or it was trying to be memorable for memorable's sake, and it just didn't have that sort of weird, nefarious Dennis the Menace style, like Bart Simpson innocence that the older games had, where they're just sort of stumbling around trying different things and different missions. If you play GTA 3, which I did this weekend, you play those games now, you can literally, and we're not game designers, but you can literally see what they thought of. It's like, okay, there's going to be a heist sequence. You're going to be in this car. We're going to trigger 10 different vans to all come at you at one time, figure it out. And you sort of just, you do that. So, well, I'm going to hop out this van that I'm in, and I'm going to go around the corner, get a bazooka and blow them all up, or I'm going to try and escape, or I'm going to do whatever. And like, because it was so early in all of their careers, for me it worked in their favor because it meant that it sparked all the imagination on your side. I know it's what I just mentioned before about different ways you can tackle missions, but the more cinematic they got, the more on rails they got, and I feel like the bigger they got, the more they had to ensure that people have a great experience with their games. Not that people weren't before necessarily, but I know that the completion rates are quite low for the older GTAs. And so I feel like they kind of needed to tell you where to go, to which weapon to use, how to take someone out. The thing is, I mentioned that window before, you know, until 2006. I might extend that, or at least cherry pick, because I do adore Red Dead Redemption. That might be my favorite Rockstar game overall. It's right next to GTA 3. Red Dead Redemption 2 was too cinematic and too slow and too sludgy for my liking. But Max Payne 3 as well, arguably the best writing in Danhauser's career, like just absolutely phenomenal character writing for Max himself. So like there are little pockets of when they manage to nail that cinematic gameplay blend, but the old school GTAs are gameplay first. They're like 90-10 splits of gameplay to everything else.
And I mean, you know, some of the games you cherry picked there, you know, Max Payne 3 especially, you know, in my opinion, one of the best third-person shooters of all time.
Yep.
But also, you can see why they've never made it again because of just how difficult it was to get that balance right. Like, anyone else doing Max Payne 3 would have knocked it out in, like, 3 years or something, 2 years, if that. But it took Rockstar ages. That game was constantly delayed. They pumped so much money into it. There was a bit
of marketing was a disaster as well.
The marketing was a disaster. A bit of controversy behind the scenes coming off Red Dead Redemption 1 about crunch and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it obviously, you know, took them a lot of effort, time, and human spirit to get that game out. So part of me, like, kind of viewing that side of it, it makes me agree with you more, where I'm like, yeah, you can, does the game justify everything that was put in with it? Does it justify the 5-year wait? Does it justify the 100-hour weeks that have gone into it and stuff? And like, I can't say one way or another. I don't, probably not ultimately, if it's not done in a safe and good way. But when it comes to the game design specifically, what you were talking about before, when it comes to the cinematic style and how on rails it is, I know you're also a fan of Nakey Jakey. He did good video that we've talked about a few times on the game design of Red Dead Redemption 2 and how cinematic it is. Mm-hmm. And while I fully understand that side of the argument and found myself agreeing with a lot of points he had and a lot of points that you've made since about how it just stifles your agency within the narrative, how you can't even do the most basic things within missions that you could do in other games. You know, you can't venture off the path at all. I can reconcile that with the missions themselves being so satisfying from a presentational standpoint and from a writing standpoint. If the writing in the presentation wasn't as strong as it was, I feel like I would also feel that itch of wanting to do something else, wanting more control of the characters. But until they fail to nail that immersion, I'm actually fully all right with it, because I would rather almost play the game as they intended, because I think the end result is so good and so universally satisfying.
That is absolutely where we diametrically oppose, because I don't want that. I want mission goals, and I want to figure out how to do it. I get the most satisfaction out of doing my own weird, is it Rube Goldberg style machine of just like, this becomes this, becomes this, this sets this off, this sets this on fire, and this blows this up while I'm round the corner doing something else. And like, I love improvising those set pieces on the spot, like making my own set piece kind of thing. It's like, you can set things. For me, they went so down the cinematic route, especially in GTA 5. Like I mentioned that shipping containers mission, because that was just playing that after growing up with all of the GTAs and just going like, what is this? Like, what are you doing? I get that you're maybe trying to get across the potential drudgery of that work, I guess. I was just like, what is this? Compared to just how freeform those older games were. But like I said, there is that Danhauser interview where he was like, well, that was how we had to do it because that was just the reality of rendering at the time. And they always wanted to do more scripted stuff. But yeah, like I said, we diametrically oppose, because the more you put me on rails, the more I'm going to say that that's not GTA. And so like the old school stuff, like I said, they had, you know, GTA like 1, the 2 London expansions, GTA 2, then 3 Vice City, San Andreas. Even GTA 4 is still quite open-ended. Like, you know, you can sort of, you know, take a rifle with you and shoot some guy's tires out while they're trying to escape, rather than have the set piece chase mission or something like that. But for me, that's what I want from GTA. And I'm really curious whether these remakes affect GTA 6 or affect either people will play these old games now remade, remastered, and go, oh my God, it was as empty as this. I didn't get any direction. What am I supposed to do this with a pistol or whatever? And or they'll go, oh, this is way more fun because I can just have more fun with it. Like I can just sort of mess around And like I said, if you want to, you know, try and do an assassination with a bazooka, you absolutely can. And like, that's a whole thing. Because what's your thoughts on that? Like, do you think that it'll change the way that they like approach GTA going forward? And what do you think of like the size of the cities as well? Because they've got so much bigger over time too.
We've talked before about map sizes, especially when it comes to games like Just Cause or Far Cry 6, where the map is so huge that you kind of almost treat it like a linear single-player game where
like
you never really return. Yeah, you go to the marker and you're continuing to press forward and you're never bothering about getting to know an area or really kind of like scrutinize it. For me, Rockstar, whether it was GTA 3, whether it's Red Dead Redemption 2, has always matched its scale with kind of that attention to detail. And more importantly, how it ushers the player through that map. Like, yes, Red Dead Redemption 2's map and GTA 5's map is massive compared to San Andreas, Vice City, or whatever. But it treats it in the same respect, I think, in that you get a little bit of the map and there's no fast travel apart from if you jump on a train or something like that. So you're constantly having to drive or jump on a horse from point to point, and you don't get, well, you get the whole thing immediately, but you're not encouraged to just kind of like go mad and go to the other side of the map. Like the way that the single player missions are kind of like rolled out gives you a player space tick that you get to know, and then you move on and then you come back. You're always revisiting. So because of that kind of really great pacing and really great structure, like even though GTA 5 City is massive, I could navigate that without the GPS. I could navigate that without looking at the map. I wouldn't know all of the exact street names, obviously, but if you told me to go to a certain general area, like I would know the best route to take. I would know the best streets to take. And I could do it. You know, I know those streets as much as I know my, you know, the village where I grew up at this point, because they instill that sense of familiarity in you. At least they did for me, that even though it's big, it still feels small. It still feels intimate. It still feels personal in a way that your Far Cry maps, in a way that your Just Cause maps, in a way that your Ghost Recon Wildlands maps just don't.
Yeah, well, see, for me, I can only say the truth, which is that I don't remember any of GTA 5's map. Like, I mean, I knew that it was a city. I played the whole game, like, I played it all through, but at no point, I remember thinking this as I was going through it, at no point could I improvise on the spot where to go, whereas I could in the old GTAs. Like, there were, in the old school GTAs, like I said, 3 Vice City, San Andreas, there were ramps that I would mentally bank, subconsciously bank, when I'm in between markers. And the fast travel thing is interesting because it forces you to take the map in, whereas over the years, they've added that in and you don't have to bother anymore. I remember when you can take a taxi places in Vice City onwards, but in GTA 5 it just, I never, like I said, I couldn't improvise on the spot, whereas in 3 Vice City San Andreas I was just, I knew where the ramps were, I knew where an alleyway was, I knew what could cut a part of the map out, and I know what would make for a cool way to do that, like if I'm being pursued by someone or I need to like head someone off so I can catch them, I can do that in a cool way, in a fun way, and the old school stuff where it would cut to a slow motion ramp, or it would, you know, like you could put the cinematic camera on and stuff like that. It just felt, I don't know, it felt more cohesive in a way. Like it just felt like they wanted you to have fun in an improvisational way, which like you're saying, it still came true for you. But for me, when they got so big and the city got so big and the more they tried to mimic a real life city layout, the more it started to lose me, because I was like, I can't, right now I couldn't memorize an entire city of that scale. So I'm just like, I struggle a bit with the improvisational side of it in terms of literally gameplay is happening. Where do I want to go? I guess GTA 5, I guess I'll just follow the marker. I guess I'll just follow the road because it's all mapped out for me anyway. And I never, that mentality just didn't come across for me. When was the last time you played the original trilogy? Was it back in the 2000s?
Oh God. Oh, I played Vice City about 4 years ago or something. The rest I haven't touched in about a decade, right? 15 years, yeah.
What was your thoughts when you revisited Vice City?
That the gameplay was clunky as anything, and the world was still lovely. Like, I still had fun missioning around, but some of the actual missions were tough. They were really tough, but that's why I've been waiting for... Sorry to cut you off. That's why I've been waiting for this definitive edition or the trilogy, whatever you want to call it, because I was actually, when you were replaying them earlier this year, you gave me the taste, and I was like, well, I'm going to do that. And then the rumors started swirling about this, so I thought, actually, I'd rather wait and play a remastered version with updated controls because I might enjoy that more.
The thing that's really like curious, like I said, I'm really curious what the newer audience takes to the old school mission design, because a lot of them, I mean, the open world crime sandbox genre was, they were building it with those games. So like there's a lot of, there's a good sort of, I don't know, a couple hours of the beginning of GTA 3, at least, you know, especially kind of thing, that are very basic missions. Like go here, kill person, go over here, steal car, go over here, put a bomb in a car. Like, you know, things that in now would be a multi-step thing. And it's like, if you add a newer, faster game engine, everything's going to be sped up. I wonder if people will play it and go, this is primitive as hell.
Well, what I find really fascinating is something that really annoyed me when I was a dumb kid just trying to cause mayhem is obviously that trilogy, and I think even GTA 4, sections is walled off, so you literally can't go to other parts of the world until you hit a certain story mission. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether that helped your sense of familiarity, perhaps, because you were literally limited to a certain section, then you were let loose to the next section, and you were kind of railroaded a little bit more than you were in 5 or RDR1.
Yeah, man, no, that's totally, that is totally valid. I think that, like I said, that for me, it was learning like routes. Like I still know, or I could map out GTA 3 right now. Like I know all those routes, and it's like finding the Banshee in the car shop down the bottom, or going to Salvatore's mansion in the north. Things that I think, like I said, you bank as you're either exploring or you're literally going from point to point anyway. That's a really good valid point though, that they do gate you off. You know, you do start in, I think it's Shoreside Vale is the last one you get to, but there's like Staunton. It takes a while before you get to Staunton. In the middle. And so like, yeah, you do, you're almost forced to take every bit of it in. I think when you're a kid as well, the opening chunk of those games feel much bigger than they are, because you've not, and especially at the time we hadn't seen anything like that. So it was like, I'm going to comb every single bit of this and just see how realistic a world it is. And back then it felt like that, the NPC, all the different dialogue, all the different things that people can say to you and the different cars and everything else. But yeah, it's a hell of a thing. Like looking back now, obviously it has been 20 years, which is kind of a crazy thing in itself. But then bringing it back, Rockstar where they are now, the amount of creative staff that have left, and the version of GTA that we're now getting, where it's still quite cartoony, it's deliberately channeling the old school box art type thing. Something that I love, but it's generationally, like even for you, and we're only separated by a few years, it doesn't necessarily click with you as much. I'm just so curious how that's going to go down.
Honestly, 100%, like, it's so funny because before it was announced, when, like, the legit rumors came out, when, like, VGC started saying it was, I think it was Kotaku as well, saying, like, it's going to come out in November, like, this is happening, it's on Unreal Engine, here's all the concrete details. Mm. I remember us doing the news video, and I was genuinely, like, this wasn't me performing for the camera or anything, like, I was so excited, like, I was so excited that this thing was real, and I was going to get to return to it. Mm. And I think it was only in that moment that I realized just how much of an impact that the games had on me, not necessarily from a gameplay perspective, but like the feeling of the GTA trilogy, the memories of being a kid and exploring it, like you said. And I'm almost looking at it like a new game release this year. Like I'm looking forward to it as much as I was Far Cry 6, Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever the hell, Back for Blood, whatever the hell else is out at the end of this year. Like I am really, really excited for November 11th to try out these games and play them in this updated fashion.
I love that.
Almost this entire podcast without even talking about like the graphics of the new remaster or anything like that.
I was going to say, I really love the approach that they've taken, which reminds me of the Mass Effect Legendary Edition, where you take the vast majority of that original game, but you update the controls, you update the feel of it, so it feels more modern, but you keep everything else. And I think that that's the thing that I'm going to be, again, another thing that'll be curious to play this, because I think you'll rock it through the first few missions in this, because it'll just be easier to hijack a car, shoot a guy, do whatever. But it is almost like a new strand. Like the last few years, the amount of different developers that have experimented with how do we bring back the old school stuff? Do we just do a base remaster? Is it a texture overhaul? Are we doing something like the Crash Bandicoot or Spyro trilogy where they're remade aesthetically and we take one of the old game's physics models and then put that across all the new ones? And then Mass Effect went, okay, well, we'll kind of split the difference. And then now Rockstar's doing the same thing. And I'm fascinated by that, because how much is it going to work for someone like me who loves those old games and loves the feel of those old games, but knows that parts of them are outdated? Like, you know, you're accelerating on X and stuff on in GTA 3. You know, you're sort of like, the shooting feels terrible for the most part in most of the old GTAs, unless you have a shotgun. So it's just that split the difference is like an interesting way to go, and maybe a way that a whole bunch of other games can go going forward, like Max Payne 1 with Max Payne 3's physics, like maybe something like that.
Wow.
You know, there's ways that you can go once you've perfected that this is how we do this stuff going forward. To end on the graphics, though, the presentation, I adore that. I mean, I'm a collecting figures fool, left, right, and center. I've got AEW figures right next to me as I talk to you. And so I love the fact that Claude, the new model for Claude, just looks like his action figure. He looks like the 10th anniversary figure from 2011. So I love how plastic everything looks, but I get that a lot of people don't.
Yeah, I mean, I need to see it in the flesh, because even from that 1 minute trailer, there were times and shots where I was looking at them and thinking, this looks really gorgeous. And then there were others where I was thinking, this looks really flat and not what I want at all. Kind of like a mobile game. I think GTA 3.
Very cartoony.
Yeah. It is very cartoony. GTA 3 out the lot looks the best. I think that genuinely, from the small amount of footage we've seen, looks stunning. Like you said, I think the character model looks incredible. I think the lighting work that they've done in the city, kind of like how moody and rainy it is, looks awesome. Mm-hmm. Love the new reflections on the cars. Love the updated models on the vehicles as well. I think GTA 3 is going to come out the best, but I'm a little bit scared of Vice City, because Vice City to me, and I'll say this now at the end of the podcast, so hopefully no one can shout at me on Twitter, it looks a little bit Fortnite-y. GTA 5 City looks a little bit
hovered over ending this call there. Carry on.
Wow. That's it. That's my whole point.
I saw that online. I saw that as the initial thing. What is it about it that makes you think of Fortnite?
It's the kind of flatness and the lack of grime, I think. Even though the original, I think I might talk to you about this after it was announced, like even though the original games obviously have this really angular kind of like cartoon exaggerated aesthetic almost, it had a sense of griminess, it had a sense of edge to it that I think the Vice City portion is kind of lost with the more smoothed out characters, the flatter lighting in that game especially, and it looks more Fortnite-y.
I would 1,000,000% say go play the original Vice City. That thing is a pastel-coloured cartoon drawing of the 80s.
I agree, but I think there's a way to do the pastel-coloured drawings, the big, bright primary colours in a way that isn't like this, and that sounds so weird. It's such a nebulous thing. And I think maybe it's because Vice City was the one I know the most, and it's the one that I've played most recently. Maybe it's just because I have
the
that
fan
in mind.
Favorite.
But yeah, it is, certainly is. That's just the one that kind of like stuck out a little bit.
I definitely, when they did the side wipes of comparing old and new, and when they do the bit where they show the Vice City version of the Miami Strip, and the buildings are still very blocky and the lighting is still quite stark, and it didn't have the wow factor that GTA 3 does. But I also, you talk about a level of grit, like I love the feeling of GTA 3, that sort of grimy, steamy, sweaty, rain-swept version of New York. I think they nail that feel. But for me, Vice City has always been this, literally, like I said, a child's drawing of the 80s. Like it's very over the top. Everyone's in pastel suits. Tommy Vercetti, I think, starts in a bright blue suit. So it's, I guess he has the blue Hawaiian shirt on. The first suit you get is like a blue suit. And so it's always been very over the top. I guess like a go-to comparison for sort of like rounded character aesthetics is Fortnite style. So I know what you mean. And I did, like I said, I didn't think that one wowed me as much as the other ones did. But yeah, I'm curious what it feels like in motion, because it is going to be 4K 60. It is going to have the new lighting engine. There's reflections everywhere. Maybe something like the Vice City strip just looks better when you're driving down it in an Infernus or whatever it is, something where the light can bounce off everything. But yes, come find us on Twitter. Come let us know what you think. Do you prefer the old school GTA feel or the new feel? What do you think is the best identity for the franchise overall? And we might put a community quiz tab poll out if I can think on before the end of today. For now, though, this has been The Wind Up. Hopefully you're suitably wound up for the week. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
A pleasure as always.
As always, we will catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.